host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. Hi, I'm Amy Goodman. Democracy Now! Is funded by you, not by the weapons manufacturers when we cover war or gun violence, not by the oil, gas, coal, or nuclear companies when we cover the climate catastrophe. If you believe in the power of independent media, please make your donation today of $5 or $10 or $5 or $10 a month or any amount at democracynow.org. Every dollar makes a difference, especially because generous donors are matching your contribution dollar for dollar. Thank you so much. This is Democracy Now!
I'm overwhelmed, overwhelmed with joy and happiness and delight for the women in this country.
Overwhelmed with joy. Those are the words of E. Jean Carroll after a New York jury found Donald Trump liable for sexually abusing and defaming her. Despite the jury's decision, Trump mocked Carroll during a primetime CNN town hall last night. The Republican crowd applauded and laughed at his remarks. We'll speak to Jane Manning, a former sex crimes prosecutor who now directs the Women's Equal Justice Project. Then Republican Congressmember George Santos has been arrested on 13 felonies, including wire fraud, money laundering, theft of public funds, and fraudulently collecting unemployment benefits for building a web of lies as he ran for Congress. Santos is refusing to resign.
I'm going to fight my battle. I'm going to deliver. I'm going to fight the witch hunt. I'm going to take care of clearing my name, and I look forward to doing that.
And we remember the Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akleh. She was shot dead a year ago today by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. No one's been held accountable for her death. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli airstrikes continue to rattle the Gaza Strip, where at least 27 Palestinians, including children, have been killed since the air raids started Tuesday. Scores of others have been injured, and dozens of homes have been destroyed or heavily damaged. The UN and other groups have condemned the killing of civilians. They're calling for an immediate ceasefire. This is 19-year-old Mohammed Sayed, whose fiancé was killed in an airstrike Tuesday.
These are her clothes that she bought for the wedding. She wanted to buy more stuff, but we lost everything due to the occupation. We lost our happiness because of the occupation. We lost our happiness and our lives together due to the occupation. I lost my happiness and joy due to the occupation.
Danya Das was 19. Her 16-year-old sister, Iman, was also killed in the attack, which had targeted the building next to theirs, which Israel said was home to a senior Islamic Jihad leader. An Israeli airstrike on the southern city of Khan Yunis killed the commander of Islamic Jihad's rocket unit earlier today. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said in a primetime TV address Wednesday its latest attack on Gaza was not over.
We tell the terrorists and whoever sends them, we see you everywhere. You cannot hide. We will choose the time and place to attack you. We will choose and not you, not just in response, but in calm and quiet times. The choice is ours.
Here in the United States, Palestinian-American Congressmember Rashida Tlaib on Wednesday introduced a resolution to recognize the Nakba when hundreds of thousands of Palestinians were forcibly expelled from their homes during the formation of the State of Israel in 1948. The resolution reads, quote, "The Nakba is not only an historical event, but also an ongoing process characterized by Israel's separate and unequal laws and policies towards Palestinians, including the destruction of Palestinian homes, the construction and expansion of illegal settlements, and Israel's confinement of Palestinians to ever-shrinking areas of land," she said. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy attempted to quash a planned event by Tlaib commemorating the Nakba by preventing it from going ahead in the U.S. Capitol. Instead, Congressmember Tlaib hosted the event in a packed Senate committee room filled with Palestinian rights supporters. in Pakistan. Arrested former Prime Minister Imran Khan is expected to soon appear before the Supreme Court as unrest grows across Pakistan. At least 8 people have been killed in protests, though Khan's party says the death toll is closer to 50. Authorities have detained at least 3 leaders of Khan's Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf party, and the government has deployed soldiers to quell demonstrations across Pakistan. This is a protester in Peshawar.
We had come out to protest, but the police fired tear gas shells at us. Then they fired shots at us. This is very cruel. We have come out because they have been cruel to Imran Khan. Also, they have arrested him. Until he is released, our protests will continue.
Imran Khan has already faced 2 corruption charges in court this week and is being detained for 8 days. Over 100 cases have been filed against him since he was ousted 1 year ago in a parliamentary vote of no confidence. Khan had described the move as a form of U.S.-backed regime change, but later placed the blame on the Pakistani military leadership, saying he wishes to mend ties with the U.S. This all comes as Pakistanis grapple with the worst economic crisis in decades, marked by record high inflation. In Tunisia, 2 worshippers and 3 security officers were killed Wednesday when a naval guardsman opened fire outside Africa's oldest synagogue on the island of Djerba. 4 security guards and 4 visitors were also injured before the assailant was shot dead. The assault targeted an annual pilgrimage of Jewish visitors to the 2,500-year-old Griba synagogue. Japan is planning to open a NATO liaison office in Tokyo, the first in Asia. Japan's ambassador to the U.S., Koji Tomita, said Tuesday the move comes as NATO and Japan are working on strengthening their partnership as tensions with Russia and China continue to rise. The office would reportedly open next year. New York Republican Congressmember George Santos surrendered to federal authorities Wednesday at a courthouse in Long Island, where he pleaded not guilty to 13 counts of wire fraud, money laundering, lying on federal disclosure forms, stealing unemployment benefits. Santos spoke to reporters after his release on $500,000 bond.
I'm going to fight my battle. I'm going to deliver. I'm going to fight the witch hunt. I'm going to take care of clearing my name, and I look forward to doing that.
After his successful 2022 campaign for New York's 3rd congressional district, Santos was exposed as a serial liar who fabricated his educational background, employment history, and religion. Republican House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has refused to demand Santos resign, saying he'll await the outcome of the trial. Republican leaders see Santos's vote as crucial in the House, where the party holds a slim 4-vote majority. We'll have more on George Santos' indictment later in the broadcast. California Senator Dianne Feinstein returned to Capitol Hill Wednesday for the first time since announcing a diagnosis of shingles in February. The 89-year-old California Democrat said in a statement she would resume her duties with a lighter schedule. Feinstein has missed 91 floor votes in the Senate, and her absence stalled the advance of President Biden's judicial nominees after Republicans denied Democrats' request to temporarily replace Feinstein in the Senate Judiciary Committee. Last year, the San Francisco Chronicle published a story raising concerns about Feinstein's mental faculties. And some of her colleagues, including California Congressmember Ro Khanna and New York Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, have called on Feinstein to retire immediately, saying she's unable to fulfill her duties. In Texas, a U.S. Army sergeant who was convicted of murdering a Black Lives Matter protester in 2020 has been sentenced to 25 years in prison. Daniel Perry was just blocks from the Texas state capitol when he fatally shot 28-year-old Air Force veteran Garrett Foster, a white man. Following Wednesday's sentencing, Foster's mother, Sheila Foster, called for an end to hateful comments directed against her family.
That is the worst thing that we've ever had to experience, and it has been the thing that has given us the most grief and heartache through this whole thing, is we're seeing the lack of humanity in this society where people can reach out to a grieving family and make fun of their deceased loved one.
Ahead of the murder, Daniel Perry posted on social media he planned to shoot looters and share dozens of shockingly racist images and memes. He also wrote, quote, "It's official. I'm a racist because I do not agree with people acting like animals at the zoo," unquote. Last month, Texas Republican Governor Greg Abbott pledged to pardon Daniel Perry, citing Texas Stand Your Ground law. Abbott's pledge came after now fired Fox News host Tucker Carlson defended Daniel Perry. Former President Donald Trump said Wednesday he intends to pardon many of the January 6th insurrectionists who've been convicted on felony charges, including seditious conspiracy, if reelected. Trump made the remarks during a primetime event in New Hampshire hosted by CNN, where he called January 6, 2021, a beautiful day.
They're proud. They were there with love in their heart. That was an unbelievable and it was a beautiful day.
During the 70-minute broadcast, Trump also falsely claimed the 2020 election was rigged, defended his family separation policy at the U.S. southern border, called on schools to harden their defenses against mass shooters, and said he'd push to arm teachers and endorsed a U.S. default on its debt, saying, quote, we might as well do it now. Trump called CNN host Caitlin Collins a nasty person. She questioned him about his mishandling of classified documents at Mar-a-Lago, his resort. And Trump mocked writer E. Jean Carroll after a jury on Tuesday found he sexually abused and defamed her in the 1990s by branding her a liar. CNN's decision to host Trump drew condemnation. Former D.C. police officer Michael Fanone, who was beaten and tased by the right-wing mob who attacked the Capitol on January 6th, wrote in Rolling Stone magazine, quote, Donald Trump tried to end American democracy. Why is CNN throwing him a rehabilitation party? A panel of advisors has voted unanimously to recommend the Food and Drug Administration make a widely used birth control pill available across the United States without a prescription. The oral contraceptive sold by Perrigo under the brand name Opill is a synthetic version of the hormone progesterone, which is highly effective at preventing pregnancy. The FDA is expected to make a final decision on the pill this summer. Meanwhile, a three-judge panel of the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals is set to hear arguments next week in a case challenging the FDA's approval of the abortion pill mifepristone more than 20 years ago. All three judges are Republican appointees hostile to abortion rights. Two of the judges were nominated by President Trump. An unprecedented heat wave fueled by the climate crisis is shattering temperature records across Southeast Asia. Cambodia, Laos, Thailand, Vietnam, and parts of China have all broken temperature records this month, with some areas topping 110 degrees Fahrenheit. Elsewhere, Spain reported its hottest and driest April on record. Wildfires are raging across Siberia and in Russia's Ural Mountains, and tens of thousands of people have been forced to evacuate their homes in Alberta, Canada, as wildfires have claimed an unprecedented 1 million acres this year. This comes as a new study finds the Petermann Glacier in northwest Greenland is melting far faster than climate models predicted, indicating global sea levels may rise quicker than previously believed. The Biden administration's agreed to conservative Democratic Senator Joe Manchin's plan to expedite the approval of fossil fuel projects, which activists have dubbed Manchin's dirty deal. The White House said the endorsement of Manchin's plan was in exchange for speeding up the construction of new transmission lines for renewable energy, which are needed to meet Biden's climate goals. This comes even as Manchin vowed Wednesday to oppose all of Biden's nominees for the Environmental Protection Agency unless his administration rescinds a plan to limit power plants emissions. And here in New York City, activists with the newly formed group Climate Defiance rallied near a $25,000 a plate campaign fundraising event attended by Biden. They demanded Biden halt the controversial Willow Project in Alaska and take other actions that would help combat the climate crisis. Human rights lawyer Stephen Danziger and actor Jane Fonda joined the action Wednesday.
For civil disobedience, right? We've been polite, we've marched, we've protested, we've written, we've made speeches. We have to up the ante now. To save the planet and our future, the window on that is closing rapidly, and we have to do something about it, and we have to be very brave.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Democracy Now!'s Nermeen Sheikh. Hi, Nermeen.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show looking more at how a New York jury has found former President Donald Trump liable for sexually abusing and defaming the writer E. Jean Carroll at the Bergdorf Goodman department store in the 1990s. After just 3 hours of deliberations, the jury ordered Trump to pay Carroll $5 million. On Wednesday, E. Jean Carroll talked about the ruling during an interview on the Today Show on NBC.
I'm overwhelmed, overwhelmed with joy and happiness and delight for the women in this country. Here is the astonishing thing about this win yesterday. Of all the cases that this man faces, all the legal quagmires, it was one. Well, let's think of all the prosecutors, all the special counsel, all the investigators. And what happened yesterday is one 5'2" little blonde, wily female attorney and one 79-year-old
advice. 5'9".
Yes.
5'9".
5'9", 79-year-old advice columnist beat Donald Trump in court.
During the trial, Donald Trump's defense team did not call any witnesses. Trump rejected his chance to testify. But on Wednesday night, in a televised town hall on CNN, Trump mocked E. Jean Carroll while the Republican audience laughed and applauded his remarks.
Are you ready?
Can I swear on my children,
which I'd never do. I have no idea who this woman. This is a fake story. Made up story. We had a horrible Clinton-appointed judge. He was horrible. He allowed her to put everything in. He allowed us to put nothing in.
Mr. President, you're recounting your version
story.
Of events here right now.
And I swear, and I've never done that. And I swear to you, I have no idea who the hell. She's a whack job.
You.
After CNN's town hall ended, Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez appeared on MSNBC and blasted Trump's remarks and CNN's handling of the town hall.
I know you said earlier that you will not comment on the platforming of such atrocious disinformation, but I would. I think it was a profoundly irresponsible decision. I don't think that it would. I would be doing my job if I did not say that. And what we saw tonight was a series of extremely irresponsible decisions that put a sexual abuse victim at risk, that put that person at risk in front of a national audience, and I could not have disagreed with it more. It was shameful.
We're joined now by Jane Manning, a former sex crimes prosecutor, now the director of the Women's Equal Justice Project, which serves survivors of sexual assault. Jane, it's great to have you with us. If you can both respond to what Donald Trump keeps on repeating about E. Jean Carroll, even after being found guilty unanimously by a jury of 6 men and 3 women, found liable for sexually abusing and defaming E. Jean Carroll, and respond to the verdict itself and the significance of it.
Let's start with the verdict itself, because I think the headline of this story is that the verdict was a resounding victory for E. Jean Carroll. Some people have had questions about why the jury didn't find him liable for rape. I think that goes to some ambiguities in E. Jean's own testimony about whether she was sure whether she was fully penetrated or not. Sometimes a jury will hear that and say, okay, well, if she's not sure, we're not sure. But the sexual abuse that she described was unequivocal, and the jury delivered a verdict that was unequivocal in less than 3 hours, which shows that there was broad consensus among the jurors that they thoroughly believed E. Jean Carroll. And so to come back within 3 hours, delivering a verdict of liability for sex abuse and a $5 million damages award, shows that this jury believed E. Jean, that they believed what happened to her was a serious offense and a serious violation of her rights, and they decided to award damages accordingly. So her message of celebration yesterday morning is absolutely right. This was a victory for her, and it was a victory for all of the survivors who were rooting for her as she approached her trial.
You know, I asked you what Trump about Trump's comments, you know, defaming her once again. Can
yes.
you talk about the judge's warning about him doing this? And also, we said despite the verdict, but maybe it was because of the verdict that he did that.
Well, let's point out that Donald Trump is very free with his comments and his insults outside of a courtroom. But he didn't have the guts to walk into the courtroom, take an oath, testify under penalty of perjury, subject himself to cross-examination. Those are all the things that E. Jean Carroll was willing to do. And those are the things that, under our rule of law, transform a person's account from mere talk to testimony. Donald Trump wasn't willing to go into court and back up his words with actual sworn testimony. E. Jean Carroll was. I think it was really a wrong move for CNN to give Donald Trump, a man who tried to overthrow American democracy, a big piece of primetime airtime to spout whatever he wanted to spout. At the end of the day, though, the jury verdict is in, and Donald Trump can say what he wants. But he was afraid to face down this woman in court, and I think we shouldn't let the public forget that.
Jane, could you explain the origins of the New York Adult Survivors Act under which this case was heard, where the jury was adjudicating on the basis of that act? If you could explain its origins and also why, even though what Trump is accused of and what he's been found liable for are criminal offenses, this was actually a civil case.
It was a civil case. And in fact, the conduct that Donald Trump was found liable for could have been prosecuted in a criminal court, but for the fact that the statute of limitations had expired. Now, New York has since abolished its statute of limitations on rape, but that only applies to rape cases from 2001 forward. It doesn't go back earlier than that. And that's why E. Jean Carroll's case was never a candidate for criminal prosecution. So she sued Donald Trump civilly under a cause of action called sexual battery. And that is what the jury found him liable for conduct that meets the legal description of the crime of sexual abuse. But it was a civil verdict for sexual battery that he was found responsible for. You asked about the Adult Survivors Act. So the Adult Survivors Act is a law that was passed last year. And it opens a one-year window of opportunity from November of 2022 to November of this year, 2023, for survivors of sexual assault to bring a civil lawsuit against the perpetrator of the sexual assault, even if the normal civil statute of limitations had expired. So normally, the statute of limitations for a civil lawsuit for sexual battery in New York State is only a year. And as we know, that's just not a realistic view of what happens for some survivors in terms of coming to terms with sexual abuse and coming forward to report it. And so there was a group of sexual assault survivors who took up this issue in Albany. And they were a group of very specific women, Drew Dixon, Marissa Hochstetter, Evelyn Yang, Allison Turcos. And they lobbied the Albany legislature to create this one-year window of opportunity under which survivors can bring a civil lawsuit, even if they would otherwise have been time-barred.
And could you explain the federal statute that was part of the Violence Against Women Act that allowed evidence of similar crimes to be admissible in sex crime cases, and how that worked, if at all, in the case of E. Jean Carroll?
Absolutely, because what we saw in E. Jean Carroll's trial was that two other women, Jessica Leeds and Natasha Stoyanoff, were permitted to testify about their experiences of being sexually assaulted by Donald Trump in much the same way that E. Jean Carroll described. This testimony was admissible because of a federal rule, 415, that was enacted as part of the Violence Against Women Act in the early 1990s. And it provides that in federal court, civil or criminal trials, evidence of similar crimes is admissible in a sex crime trial. That law was passed because Congress, as part of the Violence Against Women Act, recognized that survivors of sexual assault face added hurdles beyond those faced by other survivors to seeking justice in court, and that there is a strong societal interest in being able to hold sexual predators accountable. It's important to note, however, that the vast majority of sex crime cases, civil or criminal, are tried in state courts where this law is not in effect. And so we often have the perverse situation where a survivor takes the witness stand, and if she has, let's say, a shoplifting conviction, she can be cross-examined about that. But if a defendant has seven prior sex crime convictions, that is concealed from the jury. And that happens on the theory that, well, jurors will be prejudiced. They'll be run away with by their emotions, and they won't be able to look at the actual case that's on trial. What we know now from experience is that is not true. And Donald Trump's case is one example of that. The jury wasn't afraid to look at the verdict sheet, think back to E. Jean Carroll's testimony and say, well, we're not convinced of this allegation because she expressed some ambiguity about it. But she was clear about this count, this count, and this count, and we thoroughly believe her. So we are going to find Donald Trump liable for those things. And so what they showed, and what other juries have shown, is that they're not afraid to parse through the charges, parse through the evidence, and base their verdict on what they believe about the crime at hand. So it is time for states to go back and re-examine that rule of law that says jurors cannot know if there is a pattern to a defendant's behavior. Jurors have shown that they can handle it. The Me Too movement has shown us why that kind of evidence is so relevant. It's time for activists in all the states that don't permit this kind of testimony to go to our legislatures and say, let's take another look at this. Let's change the laws to give survivors a better shot at justice, like the shot that E. Jean Carroll had.
So, Jay Manning, we want to go to E. Jean Carroll in her own words, speaking Wednesday following the verdict.
It is a moment which, before yesterday, there was a concept of the perfect victim. The perfect victim always screams, always reports to the police, always makes note when it happened. And then her life is supposed, the perfect victim's life is supposed to fold up, and she's never sort of supposed to be happy again. And yesterday we demolished that old concept. It is gone. It is gone. And I'm overwhelmed with happiness for the women of the country. It's really not about me so much. It's about every woman.
So, Jane Manning, you work with survivors of sexual violence, and you said after the verdict came that your cell phone was buzzing with messages of relief and joy from survivors. So if you could talk about what you think the broader impact of this verdict will be on other survivors.
I think every time there's a high-profile rape case, it gives us an opportunity to have important conversations about what real rape looks like, because there are a lot of myths about who the perfect victim is and what a real rape is and what it is not. And E. Jean Carroll did a brilliant job of summarizing that in her comments. Oh, the idea that a real victim always screams, always goes straight to the police, never acts happy again for the rest of her life. E. Jean Carroll didn't fit that script. And yet she was so forthcoming about who she is and why she did the things that she did. I think some of the things that made her a quote unquote imperfect victim are actually some of the things that made her a very credible witness. It gives us all a chance as a culture to learn more about what we should and should not expect the facts of a rape case to look like. At the same time, it also gives us a chance to acknowledge that for most survivors, the system is still not working the way it worked for E. Jean Carroll. Civil lawsuits are prohibitively expensive for most survivors. Rape shield laws are very unevenly enforced in civil litigation around the country. And in criminal justice, we still have police departments that can find overwhelming resources to arrest peaceful protesters or women selling food on the subway. They can find the resources for that, but they are still not coming up with the resources to do proper investigations of sex crimes or to train detectives to do trauma-informed interviews. Right here in New York City, the NYPD allocates less than 1% of its personnel to all cases of sex crimes and all child abuse cases in all of New York City. That's exactly upside down from where we should be. And so we still have a lot more work to do so that other survivors can achieve justice.
So I wanted to ask you two questions, Jane Manning. One is, you know, Trump keeps attacking this as a Democratic hit job on him. But of course, we don't even know who the jurors are. And I want to ask you about the fact that they were anonymous. In fact, it's something that Tacopina, his lawyer, said he's going to appeal on their anonymity, anonymous also to the lawyers. And two, he talks about Reid Hoffman, the founder of LinkedIn, being one of the funders of this lawsuit that E. Jean Carroll brought. I mean, there is no question Roberta Kaplan is an astonishing lawyer. But who can afford this kind of defense? And that goes